This is Gulf Coast Life from WGCU News. I'm John Davis. Thanks for joining us. Today, Florida lawmakers officially kick off the 2020 state legislative session. It'll be Florida's second annual legislative session under the administration of Governor Ron DeSantis. Over the course of the next 60 days, the only thing legislators will be constitutionally mandated to do is pass a balanced budget. But of course, we know they'll be considering measures that tackle a broad range of issues, including abortion, immigration, public education funding, the future of the state's tourism marketing arm, criminal justice reforms, water resource protection, term limits, firearm regulation, and so much more. All with an eye looking ahead to the November elections. Joining me now in studio for a closer look at what's emerging as the central issues and legislative proposals that will likely dominate this session are Florida Gulf Coast University political science professors, Dr. Roger Green and Dr. Peter Bergerson. Welcome back, and thanks so much for taking the time to share your insights with our listeners.
Hi, John.
Thank you for having us.
Our conversation is pre-recorded, but listeners can engage with us and other listeners on social media. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media. On Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. So I wanted to start with a look at education funding, one of Governor DeSantis' priorities this year is a plan to spend some $600 million to raise the minimum starting teacher salary to $47,500 a year. Now, if approved, that would make Florida's minimum teacher salary the second highest in the nation. Nonetheless, thousands of public school stakeholders and supporters from across Florida converged on the state capitol Monday for a rally organized through the statewide teachers union, the Florida Education Association. So it seems like DeSantis, Education Commissioner Corcoran, the FEA, they all agree teachers need to be paid more, but clearly there's a rift over how we are going to do this. Tell me about what's going on.
Well, I think the crux of the controversy right now, or the conflict, it has nothing to do with raising starting salaries for teachers. It's the sort of that being pitched as the kind of primary or even exclusive remedy for the shortfall in education funding. So a lot of the critics, what they're pointing out is that does nothing to address kind of ongoing or accumulating salary inequities that might face veteran teachers as they acquire more experience and more seniority. So you could, I mean, some critics have even pointed out that making a significant increase in starting salaries for teachers without anything beyond that could create a situation where you essentially have an erosion in the salaries of teachers after they've acquired a more seniority. So there you still have some disincentives built into the sort of the career salary structure for educators.
And also there's a question I think that goes along with this is classroom sizes, how are local schools going to match what it would take to reach this threshold point? And in addition to those, auxiliary funding for things that go on in the classroom that teachers are often have to absorb part of their own salary.
Right. I'm also thinking about, and this is something you were touching on, Roger, if you were a Lee County school teacher and you taught there for 10 to 12 years, you'd be making about $47,500, which is now, if Governor DeSantis has his way, what a brand new teacher will make.
Yeah.
So kind of like the solution creates more problems.
Well, yeah, you can have what they sometimes refer to as compression and inversion problems where the salaries of entry level or new teachers could exceed that of people who've been in the system for a while. And that's a profound disincentive for people who are you want to draw in and think of this as a long-term career.
Right. And I want to touch on something that you had mentioned, Peter, regarding, you know, teachers having to dip into their own resources to cover basic classroom materials. And I think that leads to what teachers have themselves been saying about bonuses and how bonuses might be nice, but what they really are looking for is consistent resources they can rely
on. Yes. And particularly, I think, significant at the elementary level, where teachers have to supply or not supply their own auxiliary activities or auxiliary material to aid in the teaching prospect. One other thing about the governor's proposal, though, is there is a teacher's bonus that is part of his educational package as well that is not necessarily across the board, but it's considered a best and brightest bonus.
Gotcha.
Yet to be really defined clearly, but we'll see what develops there.
Education dollars make up the single biggest chunk of the state's general fund spending. But, you know, lawmakers are facing a projected $867 million drop in tax revenue over the next 2 years. So, I mean, at the end of the day, lawmakers and unions can, you know, argue over the minutia, but isn't this just going to come down to how much money there even is to work with?
No question about it. And particularly, it's going to come down to the question, as I mentioned earlier, the local portion that has to be met to supplement the state portion of it, because county have to pay part of the cost of running the schools. And so that this proposal the governor has is going to have an impact, particularly in rural areas. That was where it'll really have a significant impact.
Oh, that's a good point. That's a good point. Well, I don't know how to make this segue very gently, so I'll just say some Florida lawmakers are talking about the contentious issue of abortion. Lakeland Republican Senator Kelly Stargell's proposed a bill that would require parental or guardian consent for anyone under 18 to have an abortion. If teens can't get consent, you know, you have groups like Planned Parenthood saying they'll have to go through the courts. That can be very difficult to navigate, especially for a minor. Republicans tried to pass this same bill last year. It didn't make it through. It seems like they've really been pushing it through this year. The House version has already completed the committee process. So ostensibly on day one, the House could vote on this. Do you think that this is likely to pass this year despite its failure last year?
I think there is going to be a heightened push for it this year. I mean, it's a presidential election year, and I think that that kind of an issue in this particular year, it may actually gain greater traction than it did the last time around.
And I think it's part of a trend we've seen, yes. You know, legislative bodies in other states adopting more restrictive abortion policies since Donald Trump was elected to the White House.
So. Well, and that's a continuation of a trend that's been going on for some time, rather than in many cases, the strategy has been not so much taking on Roe versus Wade directly, but instead at the state level, trying to gradually kind of whittle away and make it increasingly difficult to obtain an abortion, even if, you know, legally there is a sense in which it, you know, they can do it, that you just make it all but impossible administratively or financially or even geographically for it to be done. So I think this is a continuation of something that's been going on for years.
And I guess what I would add is also that the courts have been involved and have directed the legislature to address this issue. I think building on what Roger has suggested or said is that most likely it's going to pass the Florida House, because this is where the issue seems to be a top agenda item. As you suggested, it's already passed the pre-legislative stage. The Senate, it may be problematic there.
The tougher sell.
Yeah. I think here's where we might see the role of the governor and what he's willing to invest in political capital on. But
Well, with opponents arguing that this bill would violate both state and federal constitutional guarantees to abortion access, at the end of the day, is this likely to wind up in litigation? And if it does, we have a very different makeup in the state Supreme Court than
yes.
we did a year ago.
Yeah, exactly. And I think also that the U.S. Supreme Court has signaled that they are not going to intervene in state legislation or judicial decisions that are made by the state, even though Roe versus Wade is the quote-unquote law of the land, and it argued of being settled law as states, as we're discussing here in Florida and other states. If they pass laws, I think the federal government or the Supreme Court would step away and just not address it.
Yeah. Right.
Well, another hot button kind of cultural issue that the legislature is going to be looking into is considering a ban on the practice of conversion therapy on minors. That's the practice not endorsed by legitimate medical organizations of trying to change a gay person's sexual orientation. More than 20 Florida counties or local municipalities have such bans in place. But then last fall, we saw a judge strike down the city of Tampa's ban on conversion therapy on minors. So I'm just wondering what you think would happen if this passed. Is this going to end up perhaps being decided by the courts as well?
I do. It surely would be. I would be surprised if this piece of legislation would pass in this session. I really see this as an issue that is more designed to attract a particular voting constituency. Yes. and keep them engaged for the primary and the November election.
Yes. Yeah, it's a symbolic political strategy, not so much a legislative one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Relatedly, we've seen once again this year bills introduced aimed at prohibiting discrimination against LGBTQ people in the workplace. Despite what's been a growing trend of support for LGBT rights, it seems like this could be a tough sell yet again. For years and years, lawmakers have introduced these bills, and then they kind of don't tend to go anywhere. Last year, even the state's Republican Party chairman, Senator Joe Gruters, did back a bill banning workplace discrimination against LGBTQ people. I just thought that was interesting that even with Republican leadership support, that bill hasn't gone anywhere. Likely going to see the same thing happen this year?
I don't see it going anywhere.
Yeah, I don't either. No. I think this is purely a symbolic gesture.
Yeah.
And one that he can say, well, gee, I've tried. But no, they're no support, I see it in the House for sure.
Okay. Well, let's switch gears and focus on environmental issues, always so vital, particularly to our listeners here in Southwest Florida. Governor DeSantis is calling for another $625 million installment for Everglades restoration and a variety of, water resource protection projects, including some aimed at addressing toxic algae bloom issues right here in our backyard. He also wants $6 million for a grant program for local governments battling sea level rise. And he really, you will remember last January, seemed to hit the ground running, coming out strongly as an advocate for the environment. Do you think we're going to see more of what we saw last year?
I think we'll see more. And I think it's commendable that, just sort of the direction and the tone of DeSantis's positions, policy positions, are strikingly different from those of his predecessor. But I think in a year that may prove to be a little more budget constrained, where there's going to be a lot of, there's going to be a lot of back and forth on what kind of funding is available for all the pet projects and initiatives. I'm not sure. Particularly the money that's being looked at to help counties deal with sea level rise. That's a pretty small pot of money that's being directed towards something that is already such an advanced problem in some areas of the state that I think a lot of critics would say, well, it's too little too late, and we need something that's far more ambitious than this. But then it comes in, you get the opportunity cost with other initiatives such as the education initiative. So it's commendable, but I think the budget constraints are going to precipitate a lot of fights over just how much money gets allocated for this.
And yeah, a lot of the environmental advocacy groups, their representatives that I've spoken with, they tell me that this is well-intentioned what he's doing, but the numbers, the amounts of money, it's just not enough to see the changes that they're intended to create. And I'm kind of wondering if DeSantis's perception as a champion for the environment might just simply be based on coming off of 8 years of Rick Scott's administration, where it was clearly not a priority.
Yeah, it surely is. And he also raised the issue as really his number one priority last year in the legislative session. This year, it appears that he's promoting education as his number one priority. I see his legislative agenda on the environment is basically a status quo at best.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And another situation here that's inducing a little deja vu, at least in me, is the fight over the state's tourism marketing arm, Visit Florida. Of course, we all remember not that long ago there was a fight over that. At this point, if lawmakers do not pass a bill to continue Visit Florida, it is slated to sunset in July. Given the essential role tourism plays in Florida's economy, will lawmakers let that happen?
I think it's an open question. It appears that it doesn't really have a lot of legislative support for the program because of the administrative bungling that took place, the sweetheart contracts in the past, and subsequently the tourism aspect of Florida seems to be doing quite well pretty much on its own. In other words, that the traditional, the land, the sea, the weather seems to be a tremendous draw, and that the contracts seem to be sweetheart deals for insiders.
Okay, okay. So from the perspective of, like, people don't need to see commercials to remember Florida has beaches. They'll come because we have beaches.
Yeah.
Okay, got it. Well, then again, it'll be really interesting to see what happens if Visit Florida does sunset, and then what happens to our tourism numbers the following year. In any event, I digress. Firearms are certainly going to be a central issue to this year's legislative session. There's a consortium of Democratic support for closing what they call the background check loophole, and that allows people to purchase firearms in a private sale without having to go through the background checks they would be required to do if they were making a purchase through a licensed dealer. Carlos Guillermo Smith, Winter Park Democrat, is once again pushing a proposed ban on assault weapons and high-capacity magazines. But even in the wake of the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School mass shooting that occurred while lawmakers were in session, such proposals didn't go anywhere. Would you imagine they would gain much traction this year?
I think they could gain traction in the Senate. I think that in the Florida House, there's going to be substantial opposition still. In fact, in the House, I mean, you know, of course, we're seeing a resuscitation of efforts to make it legal to carry on campus and the like,
yes,
which is supposed. So I think it may gain some traction in the Senate. I mean, it remains a controversial issue. And I think absent another event of the, sort of the scope and horror of what happened in Parkland, Florida, mm-hmm, I don't really see anything with respect to tightening the background checks or the assault weapons ban. I don't really see those making it through the House.
All right. I agree. I think the mood or temperament in the legislature is one of, if anything, rolling back some of the provisions that were passed. The gun lobby seems to be caught flat-footed by the governor's effort of ramrodding through the legislature what would normally be thought of here in Florida as a pretty restrictive firearm legislation. So additional legislation, I just don't see it as a high priority.
Right. Yeah, and the NRA, the principal NRA lobbyist in Florida, who's fairly notorious, Marion Hammer, she's a tough, savvy lobbyist and former NRA head, and she has enormous influence over many of the representatives in the House, and I just don't think the House will go along with this.
Yeah. On the immigration front, Governor DeSantis has been pushing the idea of requiring all employers, not just public ones, but private ones as well, to use the federal E-Verify system to ensure their employees are legally eligible to work in the U.S. He seems to have taken up this mantle from his predecessor, Rick Scott. In years past, what do you think has kept Florida lawmakers from adopting this requirement? You think there's just some dirty truths about the cost of labor that we don't always want to recognize?
Yeah, well, it's that. I mean, we there is a kind of schizophrenic attitude where the public will gravitate toward the incendiary rhetoric about the dangers posed by undocumented workers and the like, and yet at the same time they appreciate the economic benefits of their presence in the working population. But I think it also reflects the enormous influence that the agriculture, tourism, and construction industries and their lobbying arms enjoy over legislators, not only in Florida but many other states. I mean, Florida is like many states where the use of the E-Verify system is essentially voluntary, so that, you know, in a place like Florida, you have well below 50% of the businesses making use of the E-Verify system. So I think it's a combination of the two. But the lobbying efforts here against making E-Verify mandatory by businesses, I think the lobbying effort is going to be pretty intense against it.
The state's affordable housing challenges, are only getting worse as more and more people move into Florida, similar to how education dollars are also being challenged. Yet lawmakers have continued to take money from the Sadowski Trust, which that money is specifically earmarked for affordable housing, and they've been using those limited funds on unrelated initiatives. Do you get a sense that maybe this might be the year lawmakers turn the page on that and actually use the Sadowski dollars for affordable housing?
I think so. It's how to characterize it, I guess. It's not a robust amount of money to start with, yeah. Or it doesn't, in particularly in relationship to the demand or the need that is out there. But yeah, I do. I see this as an issue that they will probably address as a budget issue.
And Governor DeSantis has, he's kind of taken a role in this as well and expressed support for these initiatives. But so I agree with Peter. I think that this could see some success this year. But then there's the skeptical part of me that thinks, well, if we have a hurricane or something like it,
right.
There are all kinds of events where I wouldn't be surprised to see it, sort of these backdoor end run strategies for plundering it once again. So I think we're one disaster away from, even if it is successful this time, I think we would be one disaster away from seeing it, used for that fashion again. But Peter's right. It's not, the amount of money we're talking about, it still falls woefully short of what would be needed to address the problem.
Okay. So you're saying even if they weren't raiding the Sadowski Fund, the money in there is not going to necessarily be a game changer?
No.
Okay.
And it's probably a token amount that is given to urban legislators in return for some other piece of legislation that they have included this as part of a bargain or log rolling exercise.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mentioned at the top of the hour that, all of this is happening with the November 2020 election kind of looming in the background there. I'm wondering how you see that potentially playing out this legislative session. And just as one example, we have a number of members of our Southwest Florida state legislative delegation all vying to take over Francis Rooney's congressional seat next year. That just seems interesting to me because here you've got a group of people who, for the most part, have presented kind of a unified front. They represent yeah. Southwest Florida. They're all Republicans, but now they all want the same job.
Well, one of the things it's going to do for sure is going to have a chain reaction in opening seats for in our local area. At least two or three are going to be the case. I think you're also are going to see a geographical conflict that exists within the Republican Party between Lee County and Collier County as far as the voters go. And you also may see gender issues that may have an impact on the election.
How do you mean?
Well, you have one of the Republican candidates is a woman. And
Heather Fitzenhagen.
Yeah, yes. And that will offset some of the other subgroups within the Republican Party as far as voting patterns and what may happen.
Does it signal anything to you that the field of candidates is already so crowded in that race?
Not me. No. In fact, I expect more.
Yeah. In a especially a presidential election year and the sure. significance of Florida.
It's a safe seat. You have a number of state legislators who are term limited out. And so they see an opportunity here to advance their career. No, I expect more than the half a dozen we already have.
Yeah, I agree.
Are there any legislative proposals or context you would like to highlight that I haven't brought up that might be a central issue this session?
I guess what I would say is that one of the things we'll look at, see again how effective the governor is going to be in his proposal and his legislation. I think it also one of the things will be is the level of contention that exists leading into what you suggested earlier, John, and that is in an election year, the voters will be looking at, I think they're would like to see some degree of level a leveling and a lack of conflict, and that would be some of the things to look forward in return to. In the past, a couple of sessions, not the last one, but two or three before that, they were wildly controversial. So I see a rather staid status quo overall session.
Yeah, I'll be curious to see what, if anything, might happen this legislative session with respect to some criminal justice reforms and especially sentencing reforms. I mean, if you consider both that it's going to be a somewhat more budget-constrained year and that there is some traction now enjoyed nationwide by sentencing reform efforts to address overcrowded prisons with crumbling infrastructure, rising health care costs for the geriatric prison population. Some of these sentencing reform proposals in the direction of trying to give judges greater discretion, sentencing discretion when it comes to nonviolent
offenders. Doing away with some of those harsh mandatory
minimums.
That
I think there's sort of a nationwide environment now that makes sort of things a bit more conducive potentially for that. I think the House will still be sort of interesting to watch with respect to those, but I think it's going to be an interesting year to watch with respect to sentencing reforms.
Yeah. One of the things that does not seem to be on the horizon in the legislature is the need for expansion of the Affordable Care Act here in Florida. I think that that is something that unfortunately is not there. Another is the red flag law.
Yeah.
That would be another that seems to be completely – those two things have been completely ignored. So you need to look at not only what they are going to work on and hopefully accomplish, but what they are not – is not even been mentioned or on the agenda.
That's a really good point. I mean, We just ended an open enrollment period where Florida once again dominated the country among states who did not – expand their own marketplace and went through the federal marketplace. So, yeah, that does seem like an issue that maybe lawmakers are overlooking because it certainly seems to be important to the folks who live here.
Yes.
I think also another is to keep an eye on some of the personalities who may be interested in, in 2 years from now, there'll be Senate elections. And, they're always, one of the things that legislators are always looking for, politicians in general, is the next election. And this is an opportunity for them to develop, their following or in essence, their base. And also look at fundraising. This will be something I think is important to follow in the legislative session.
Yeah.
Well, that is all the time we have for today's show, but I want to thank my guests, Florida Gulf Coast University political science professors, Dr. Peter Bergerson and Dr. Roger Green. Always great to connect with you. Let's do this again in 60 days.
Let's do it. Let's do it, John.
I'd love to. Thanks, John.
Our show today was produced by yours truly. Our director is Richard Cinqui. Our social media coordinator is Tara Callaghan. Gulf Coast Live is made possible through the generous support of the Elizabeth B. McGraw Foundation. For now, thanks for listening. I'm John Davis. This is WGCU-FM, Fort Myers 90.1, WMKO Marco Island 91.7 FM, NPR for Southwest Florida.